Chapter 7. Greeted by Death. There is an art to dying, but it is a dying art. Corvus Corax, Primarch of the 19th Legion.
Does he yet live? Asked Valentus Dolor.
There was no response. They had all come in haste, rushing to the residency, and had entered the Medicae Hall to find the Ashen Chamberlain outside a sealed, guarded apothecarian chamber.
"Mademoiselle, is he alive?" Dolor pressed.
Yuton looked up at him. She had been lost in thought. Her frail face was more pale and translucent than ever, drawn more by pain than age. She had been a beautiful woman in her youth. A noted beauty. Now her beauty was her strength, and an intense inner core of belief in and devotion to Rubute Gilliman. The day's events had shaken that.
Yes, she replied. My Lord Valentus, he lives. He has been most sorely hurt, and it is only chance that spared his life. One lucky shot.
I think not chance, said Fratus Augustine. I rather think the martial prowess of our beloved lord saw him through this infamy. His practical...
Yes, said Yuton sharply. Yes, why not? Let us believe he is an invulnerable god who can do no wrong. Let us believe that death cannot overtake him, or that there are no limits to his energy and capacity. Let us put our trust in him blindly, and expect him to deliver us single-handedly from all this.
My lady... said Augustine. I meant no disrespect.
Did you not? She asked. Really?
She eyed Fratus Augustine with barely disguised contempt. In the absence of Marius Gage, who had vanished during the battle for Calf in pursuit of the renegade Cor Fearon, Augustine had been elected to the post of Master of the First Chapter, and thus First Master of the Ultramarines. He was a bullish, aggressive man, and one of the finest field commanders in the 13th. Yuton had not favoured his appointment, though she enjoyed no official influence in such legion matters. She had advised Gilliman to prefer Verus Caspian, current master of the 2nd. Augustine was too focused and aggressive, in her opinion, to suit the broader needs of the role. Caspian was wiser, more compassionate, more nuanced. She urged that Augustine should be kept where he would be most effective, in line command, in the field. Gilliman had not taken her advice. Yuton took a step towards the massive First Master and tapped the chaste gold engraving of his breastplate with the tip of her staff.
"Understand respect, First Master," she said. "Is this respectful?"
She tapped again.
"No, it is not. No, it does not accord with respect. I do not know my place. I am but a chamberlain of the court, and you are the Lord of Lords in Macragge's Legion. But I am listened to, because I am not sparing in my wisdom. Each to his own, Augustine, each to his strength. If you would show our beloved Primarch respect, then first do so by accepting his limits. Your vapid praise sounds like false flattery. He is more than human, but he is only more than human. The Invictus Guard counted 85 spent bolter rounds or impact holes in that chamber. If any one had struck his unarmored head, any one, he would be dead. And this conversation would be very different.
Lady, Augustine rumbled.
Where was the error today, sir? She asked, tapping again. Was it the bodyguards for failing to anticipate? Was it the residency guards for not scanning the visitors properly? Wait, was it Badorum and his men for failing to police the precinct? It must have been, for they are but human, and therefore flawed, unlike the transhumans of the Legion. Or perhaps it was Titus Prato, or others of his office, perhaps even our Lord Librarius Ptolemy, for failing to foresee the event. Or perhaps it was our avenging Lord Gilliman, for being too tired and burdened with duties, for slipping a moment and allowing someone a quick pass through residency security because he wanted the relief of a conversation with an old friend? Gilliman ordered the would-be killers through, Master Augustine. He ordered them through, and no one thought to question that authority. Do you know what that means? It means he made a mistake. Let us all help him not to make another.
Dolor glanced sideways at Titus Prato, but Prato had already read the instruction before it had been voiced. He stepped forward.
No one here disputes your words, mademoiselle, he said, taking Yuton gently by the arm. Let me fetch you water and sit with you. You've had a long and stressful day.
Yuton glared at Augustine a moment longer, then sagged and nodded. She allowed Prato to lead her from the waiting chamber.
"I've no idea what he sees in her and her counsel," growled Augustine as the hatch closed.
There were 13 senior ultramarines in the chamber, the anteroom of the residence's Medicaid hall, all of them, at least, of the rank company commander or chapter master. Some laughed. Verus Caspian did not. Neither did the most senior of them, Tetrarch Dolor.
"I am glad you are not of the Librarius, Augustine," Dolor said.
"How so, my lord?" Augustine replied.
"Because then you would know what I was thinking about that remark," said Dolor.
Commander Badoran and 5 of his guards entered the chamber through the southern hatch. They stopped short when they saw the assembly of Legione's Astartes officers.
"My lords," said Badoran, removing his helm smartly and saluting, "I came to find out how he fared." "He lives, Commander," Dolor said, "and will live yet."
Badoran breathed out and nodded.
"No thanks to you," said Augustine.
"My lord?"
Augustine bore down on the commander of the household company like a titan lining up on an unshielded kill.
"You screwed up," he snapped. "Where were you? Where were your toy soldiers, your scans, your surveillance? How long did it take you to respond?"
"My lord," Badoran stammered, "our scanners were jammed. We had no..."
"Excuses," sniffed Augustine. "I've a mind to see you relieved of duties."
"I don't think you can do that," said Verus Caspian. "Household is a different chain of command to the Legion, and..."
"Close your mouth, Verus," Augustine spat over his shoulder. "This is wartime. Wartime rules apply."
"First Master, the fault was most surely ours," said Dracus Gorod, commander of the Invictus Guard. His voice surged out through the vox unit of his massive war helm. His armour was stained with blood, Gilliman's blood. He had been one of the men who had carried the Primarch to the Medicaid hub as soon as the high chamber doors had been breached.
"He dismissed you, Gorod," Augustine laughed. "He said he could do without you."
"I make no excuses," said Gorod. "We should have insisted. We should have vetted the visitor list, no matter who they seemed to be. Also, the assassins were Alpha Legion. Their jamming tech was exceptional. We could not override it."
"Let us learn from it, then," said Augustine.
"Their tech self-destructed before it could be examined and reverse-engineered," said Gorod.
"Alpha Legion," murmured Niax Nessus, Master of the Third. "What have we become? The proud legions? What has this conflict evolved into?"
"Something we can kill and fight," Augustine said.
"I think we may need to be smarter than that," said Caspian.
"I told you to close your mouth," said Augustine. "We are one voice here."
"Then we should decide what that voice says," Caspian replied.
The hatch of the Apothecarian whirred open suddenly. A gust of environmentally stabilized air exhaled at them, like the opening of a void lock. It stank of blood, of counterseptic gels, of graft cultures and sterilizing solutions. The chamber revealed before them was gloomy, illuminated only by the low-light displays of life support systems. Gilliman had come to the door. He glared out at them like a wounded beast looking out of its cave lair.
He was breathing hard, and his torso, neck, and one side of his face were wrapped in juvenat wadding and fixing wraps.
"The walls," he wheezed, "are not so thick. I cannot hear your bickering. This is not how we behave in crisis."
"Great Lord," Augustine began, "you must recuperate, and..."
"This is not how we behave in crisis," Gilliman repeated.
Dolor stepped forward and dropped to one knee, his head bowed. One by one, the others did the same, transhumans and humans alike. Augustine was the last to kneel.
"How may we serve you, Lord?" Dolor asked.
"Stand," Gilliman said. They stood.
"I will take your private counsel now, Tetrarch," Gilliman said. "I must do something more than just sit in a bed while I heal. First Master Augustine, you will carry out a full security review of the residency and the city."
"Yes, my lord."
"I'm not looking for blame, Augustine, and I do not expect to hear of any punishment unless a true dereliction of duty can be proved. What I want to know is how they got in, so we can prevent it happening again. Give us practical information to improve our practical. Find out how else people come and go, especially the off-world influx. What needs to be monitored more closely? What procedures do we need to improve? Do any of the Alpha Legion or any of our other enemies remain among us?"
Augustine nodded.
"My lord," he said, "I will have my staff officers detailed to this audit at once, and..."
"No, Augustine," said Gilliman. "You do it. Don't hand it off. Oversee it personally. Consult by all means, but consult wisely. Bring in Pollux."
"The Imperial Fist?"
"Correct. The Fists were charged with the defense of Terra. Let us learn from their mouths about the performance of that duty. Am I understood?"
"Yes, Lord," replied Augustine, his jawline tight.
"You think I demean you somehow, Freitas?" Gilliman asked. "You think I insult you by giving you a job that is beneath you? You are first master of the Ultramarines, and that legion knows no greater responsibility than the security of Macragge. I do not know how this task could possibly be beneath you."
"Apologies, my lord," said Augustine. "It is an honour. I will do this, and I will do it scrupulously."
"Of course you will," Gilliman said, nodding.
"The rest of you return to your duties. Assist the First Master in any way he requires, and do your utmost to defuse any alarm or anxiety in the Legion, the Army, and the public that has arisen because of this incident.
News of the attempt on your life has been restricted to privileged personnel only, my lord," said Gorod.
Gilliman sighed.
"Nevertheless, it will get out, so expect it to, and be ready to diminish its negative effect," said Gilliman. "In fact, I think the news should be made known. If we have enemies on Macragge, they will learn they have failed, and the story will raise the base level of vigilance. Besides, the people of Macragge will be troubled by rumours of an attack on me. I think they would far prefer the fortifying frankness of an account of today's events, especially if it includes the fact that I am very hard to kill."
He dismissed them and turned back into the Apothecarian with Dolor. Suddenly, as soon as the hatch shut, Gilliman reached out to the Tetrarch for support. Dolor shouldered Gilliman's weight without a word and guided him back to the bed. Shrouded Medicaid personnel, as silent as wraiths lurking in the shadows, moved forward to reattach nutrient drips and monitors to Gilliman's chest and limbs. Small servitor units were moving around and beneath the bed, scrubbing away the bloodstains and incinerating dirty dressings.
"She was right," Gilliman murmured as he lay back.
"Lord?"
"Yutin," Gilliman said. "She advised against Augustine."
"I confess," said Dolor, "I've never liked the man, except when he's been at my side in a fight. Then he has few equals."
"That is precisely why I chose him to succeed Gage," said Gilliman.
I was angry. Treacherous war had wounded us deeply. I wanted a warrior to lead the Legion to vengeance. But our situation grows ever more complicated, and Freitas is no politician.
None of us are, said Dolor.
Not true. Not if I have done what I set out to do. I didn't raise the Legion solely to build an imperium and fight a crusade. Crusades are finite. Wars end. I raised the Legion to have a successive function in peacetime, too. As leaders, as statesmen, as rulers of the Imperium, once it was built. Dolor said nothing. I always thought of the future. The far future, Gilliman said quietly, where there is only peace. What will our kind do then? What, by comparison of Russ and his wolves? What purpose will his kind have when there are no more worlds to conquer? The War Master's treachery has given him a few extra years of bloodshed to justify his purpose, said Dolor. Gilliman nodded. He's probably almost grateful. No, strike that. It's too harsh a judgment, even for Russ, even as a joke. But Russ must wonder, mustn't he, about the peace time that will someday follow this? What will his purpose be? He believes that his legion exists to sanction those who become problems to the Imperium. Does he fear that one day that will be him and his kind? That he will face the sanction for being too wild and dangerous for a civilized culture to accept? He looked at Dolor. Tell me of other things, Valentus. Let us do practical work here rather than theoretical musing. Report to me. What did you find? What fell from the heavens? A body, said Dolor.
Gilliman's eyes narrowed.
Human? Transhuman, said Dolor. It is remarkable, Lord. We have not identified the corpse or its origin, but I have ordered that it be recovered and brought here to the Medicae Hall for analysis. The entire impact site is currently being scoured for evidentiary data. I have also taken the liberty of restricting the incident at vermilion level until we know what we're dealing with. Very few individuals know what has been found, and they are all oathed to secrecy.
I trusted the light of the Pharos might bring many things to Macragge, said Gilliman. Lost ships, lost friends, enemies even. I was prepared for the unexpected, but a body falling from the stars.
If I was a superstitious man, Lord, said Dolor, I would say it feels uncomfortably like an omen. And if I was a truly superstitious man, I would wonder what else might be coming.
The warp sent a demon to kill him. He felt that he should have been flattered. The handoff was made without incident. The assigned stealth cutter, procured by the Cabal, made no mark whatsoever on the acutely sensitive scanner systems of the Ultramar humans as it blinked in and blinked out, depositing him by long-range jump onto the northern massif under a peak called Andromache. He woke from the jump, aching and curled in the fetal position on the glacier. Blood was streaming out of his nose like water from a tap.
"Thank you so much,"
he whispered out loud, spluttering blood, speaking to inhuman gods and demi-deities who could no longer hear him and who had never cared for his opinions anyway. The stealth cutter was long gone, a darting spectre retreating into the outer void. He wondered if any of the souls in Gilliman's would-be empire had even tracked it. He doubted it. A ghost return? A slight imaging artifact? Perhaps. Human technology was highly advanced, but it did not begin to match ancient Kinnebrach levels. No wonder the humans were losing. No wonder they were losing to themselves. No wonder he cared. He was human. At least he had been, once, long ago. He worked with the Eldar now, though he hated the mother-loving sweet stink of them. He worked with the Eldar and the other inhuman breeds of the Cabal that they were in bed with. in bed out of desperation. He hated that fact even more. He hated the fact that the human race was the reason why the galaxy was dying. Glatro had explained that to him in great depth. He had explained it to him when he had first recruited him from the blood-soaked sands of Iwo Jima. The human race, vibrant, innocent, and fecund, was the doorway that the warp was going to use to flood the galaxy. Chaos would win, because mankind was the weak link that would allow the warp in. He was a perpetual. He had been born that way, a natural perpetual, but the Cabal had enhanced his abilities. He'd been working for them ever since that recruitment on the beach, old-style bullets zipping and fizzing around his head. He'd been killing people for them ever since. Good men. Sometimes serving the Cabal seemed counterintuitive. They were very obliging. They explained why a good man had to die and why it was not a bad thing. The wet work they had had him perform. Damn. In Memphis, against the good man, and then, more than 1,000 years later, in the City of Angels, against the brother. Then in M19, against Holyard, in the glass temple of Manunkind. And in M22, against Meza Hassan, in the spire terrace before his Word of the Law speech. And then Duma, though no one could persuasively argue against the fact that Duma really had to die, by any standards, even human ones. Things had evolved, of course they had, because of the quality of the opponent. The constant cosmological chess game with the hyper-brilliant but wayward Emperor had placed things in flux. The Cabal could no longer quite contain or predict his actions. The Monkey was getting above himself. So now the ploy was known as the Horus Gambit, or the Alpharius position. The purpose was simple. Let chaos win. Let the warp win so hard, so damnably hard, it falls in upon itself and burns its fury out. Let humanity be the sword it falls on. He did what he had to do. He did what they needed him to do. Downside, on an unfriendly planet, bleeding internally and externally from a covert fast-jack jump, holding himself together and carrying the flesh tank sack his weapons were in. He was high in the mountains, a week's walk from McCrag City. That wasn't the problem. The problem was the demon that the warp had sent after him. 3 days after his jump, he turned and said to the cold mountain air, "Show yourself!" Laughter echoed back, though it was hardly human. It rippled up the deep trenches of the Andromache foothills. "Come on, sir," he said. "Come on, Mr. Demon. I await with interest." There was a long, silent, sucking second. Then a voice said, "I know who you are. I have your name. I have possession of you." He sighed and dropped his pack and his weapons and opened his arms wide to the mountain air. "You have me, then. Take me."
"Damon," answered the voice, "an interesting choice of name, given your trade."
"What can I tell you, demon?" he answered.
Silence.
"You have my name," Damon said. "What are you waiting for?"
His hands were still outstretched. He turned in a slow circle, the snow scrunching under his boots.
"I have your name indeed," the voice answered, "and true names are true power. I have your name, and you cannot deflect me."
"I know that," he said.
"So you know I'm going to kill you. You know that is what I've been sent to do."
"Yes," he said.
"Good."
He cleared his throat. The atmosphere on the high plateau was thin.
"What is my name to you?" he asked. Daemon Prytanis,
the demon replied.
And knowing my true name gives you power over me? He asked. Yes. You have me then, child of the warp. You have me soundly. As I die and as I accept my death, allow me one last boon. Speak it. Tell me so I know the true name of my obliterator.
A chuckle rippled through unspace.
Die forever knowing it, the voice said. I am Ushpetkar. I resign. Come and get me, he said.
The shadow of the void rose and rippled at him. It came at him across the snowfield like a black tsunami.
By the way, Daemon Prytanis said at the very last minute, that is not my true name. Turns out you have no power over me, but I know you now. I have your true name, Ushpetkar.
In his pocket, Daemon had been frantically getting the vessel ready. He made the appropriate signs and cast the appropriate runes, just as he had been shown. He threw his magic into the onrushing face of the screaming demon. The demon exited real space in an explosion of fury and indignation. Daemon was thrown to the ground. When he opened his eyes, he realized he was soaked. He was covered in blood, and so was a vast area of the glacier shelf around him. None of the blood was his. Slowly, badly broken, he got up. McCrag City was still a while away, a long trek down the mountain. In this manner, the killer, calling himself Daemon Prytanis, came to McCrag.